You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, Mrs. Martinelli, we're well into 2020, and we've got some new laws. As if it isn't bad enough, with all the laws we've got already, we've got some brand new laws.
You know, I'm wondering if when they make a new law, do they have to get rid of a law? It's kind of like when I buy a piece of new clothes, I have to get rid of something else.
Well,
just because I have no more room in my closet.
Okay, so when he came into office, what Trump said to Congress is, if you guys make a new law, you got to get rid of two old laws,
two old regulations.
Okay. And so they started getting rid of regulations, and that's why in some areas of the economy we've done, you know, very, very well.
Yeah, but, you know, that's Congress, okay, and that's the federal government. In the states, forget about it, because they can't make enough laws to control our lives.
And that's a great segue into me talking about what some of these new state laws are.
Okay, good, because I haven't seen a lot of them. I've seen a few.
Okay, so first of all, I mentioned the economy, so let's talk about wages. Well, the minimum wage is going to go up to $15 an hour in 4 states and 23 other cities across the United States, most of the cities also being in the state of California. So they've been...
Imagine my surprise.
Well, they've been hankering for 15 bucks an hour, and so now they're going to get their wish, and they're going to go up to 15 bucks an hour. So that means that if you're flinging hamburgers and putting fries in a basket, you're going to get 15 bucks an hour.
Well, and that's if you get to keep your job at all, because a lot of these places, in response to this law, are cutting hours, and they're... putting in machinery that's going to take your order rather than a human being.
Well, you know, that's exactly right. And, of course, McDonald's that has, something like 25 or 30,000 restaurants around the world, and obviously predominantly in the United States, they're way ahead of the curve. And so this $15 an hour thing has been talked about and protested in states like California and New York. And so McDonald's saw the handwriting on the wall, and they have begun the automation process to do exactly what you're talking about.
Well, and Carl's Jr. saw the handwriting on the wall, and they moved a lot of their people to Texas.
Well, the other thing that happened, so with McDonald's, McDonald's, in many McDonald's now, they have taken significant strides in automation. And I've experienced that. I've been into a couple of McDonald's where basically instead of having 25 or 26 people, they only have about 4 people. So they have people to cook, and they've got one server at the front just to make sure that people are working the machines right. And then they've got the person at the takeout window, right? That when you go up and you push the button, or, you know, you drive up to the kiosk or whatever it is when you go in the drive-thru and you give your order. So they've got that one person that takes the orders now. They've got 2 cooks to cook the burgers. And of course, all of that stuff is almost automated as it is. And then they've got one person at the front counter to handle the walk-in crowd. But when you walk into these McDonald's, they have 3 or 4 machines that have the entire McDonald's menu on it, and all you do is push exactly what you want, and then your order is delivered immediately on the screen to where the cooks cook the food.
Right.
And you go up there, and matter of fact, you can pay and everything. So the only thing that the person does up at the front is basically hand you your food.
Right. And I see
and
that.
I'll tell you what, I like it better because I'm not standing in line anymore at McDonald's.
Yeah, that's true. And I see it at Panera Bread and some other places like that. It's getting more commonplace. And the other thing is, you know, when Starbucks and the different places have, and any of the fast food places, when you can go online and place your order and have it ready, you know, it does eliminate employees. And this is the unintended consequences of these laws that tell you how much you have to pay people. I don't think that the state should tell you how much you have to pay people. I think that people have free will, and if they want to accept a job at $7 an hour, or $8 an hour, or whatever it is, okay, I don't care if it's $4 an hour or $40 an hour, it is your choice as a human being to take that job or not. And I don't think that the state should regulate what people get paid in certain industries.
Well, you know, and I agree. And one of the things that gets me is the driving force and just how people have changed and the whole paradigm of minimum wage work has changed. Okay, so when you and I were growing up, and I must tell you that I never worked in a burger place or a fast food place, but I know you did. I know once you worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken,
yes.
Right? And but I just did classic, you know, minimum wage work when I was a kid. But in those days, when we were growing up, it was always considered to be a stepping stone job.
Sure.
Okay, so this was a job that you took and you got minimum wage. And of course, in my day, it was like it started at $1.75 an hour, went to $2.50 an hour. And that was to learn how to work. Okay, how to work, how to follow orders, how to follow directions, how to save your money. Right. Learned a little bit about the economy. And that's what that job was for, to prepare you to go to another job later or to learn what skill sets suited you and what skill sets didn't, or what you really wanted to be when you grew up. Right.
Right. Because nobody should be expected to know what they want to be when they're in high school. So you take steps and you meet people along the way. And honestly, most people don't intend to be in the job that they end up in life. Right. Things happen in their life that directs them to that channel that they then become whatever they become. For example, I know that you didn't intend in your early years on being a police officer.
No, I
However,
didn't.
Life circumstances,
right,
and a series of events took you to that path. And, you know, the same for me, that I had actually went to school to be a lawyer. And a series of events, people that I met, took me in a different path, and I'm very happy with that path. But if you asked me when I was in high school, I never would have said I would be a business owner and I would have worked for the police department. I would have done the things that I've done in life. None of those would have been on my radar.
Right. And you know, the other paradigm was, it that's changed significantly, as this was never intended. In other words, minimum wage employment was never intended to be something where you could live on with a family. Okay.
Right.
And so now that's changed everything. So because, and I think it's because of a couple of things. Now, I don't want to talk about retired people because that's a totally different reason why people work minimum wages jobs. There's several different reasons for that. But I'm just talking about your average person growing up. So teenagers and college kids would work minimum wage jobs so that they had money to supplement whatever they were doing and whatever they wanted,
sure,
to buy.
Sure, gas money.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
going out,
money, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Going out to entertain or maybe buy books or do stuff like that. And when you're going to college, you know, just extra money. If you weren't on scholarship or your folks weren't paying for you to go to school, this was the way that you made some extra money. And we all get that. And we all go to school. We've all done that gig. But we never intended that we were going to live 24/7 working at McDonald's.
Right.
Okay, but now, and I'm going to give you my personal opinion, Lynn, because people in America have low skill sets.
Yes.
Okay, in other words, they've decided that they didn't want to go to school, all right, so they never got an education. They didn't develop skill sets, employable skill sets, like they never went in the trades, they never learned anything like that, anything that could get them a higher level job, and then maybe there was issues with drug abuse and alcohol abuse or just whatever. Now, all of a sudden, we have all these people. Of course, now we've got 26, 27 million illegal aliens. in this country, which is a huge paradigm.
With low skill sets.
Yeah, or no skill sets almost, okay? Except for cutting a lawn or you know, doing burgers or working on an assembly line for the same reasons. They didn't educate themselves. They didn't get, you know, job skills. They didn't do the trades, all of that stuff. When they came across the border, now they are forced, sort of self-forced, into these industries. And as a result, you know, they've got a family, they've got a couple of kids, they've got a wife or a husband or whatever, or grandmother or whatever, and now they're working at McDonald's or they're working at a couple of different places. That was never intended to happen. And in this country, we have allowed that to happen. And that's a real problem. Because what's happening now is that we're seeing, when you go into McDonald's, when you go into KFC, when you go into Wendy's and all these different fast food places, you're finding adults in there. You're not finding kids. You're not finding teenagers in there because they can't get a job because all the adults have taken the jobs.
That's probably true. You know, I want to go back to something that you said that's interesting to me, that we have a lot of unskilled people. And we are a country who does focus on education. And that's a whole nother subject for me because you know how I feel about our educational system here. But what happened back umpteen years ago, really, you know, more when we were younger, and the school system started changing, and then they started taking the trades out of school, and they started taking, you know, the things, the civics, the trades, the physical education, all those things out of school. The kids were, in our day, you know, they could learn auto shop and they could learn home ec and they could learn different woodworking and electricity and different things like that. Yeah. And then they started taking that out. So it's not the kids' fault that they don't have that educational set. And we really kept losing those trades, Ron, until President Trump came into office and he started bringing the trades back. And, you know, they're back with a vengeance, and I love it because I know some of our kids' friends have gone to trade schools. There's a gal that went to automotive school, and she is making some really good money now because she really is good at what she does. She knows how to weld.
I was just going to say, is that our welder friend? Yeah she's and making bank right now.
And then another friend went to learn the whole electricity, like the big electricity, like the power poles and the transformers and things like that, and, you know, got himself a good job. And so now these trades are coming back. And you see, you know, when I'll tell you what, our washing machine just was on the fritz. That visit cost $400 and some for somebody to come out. And it was a really small part. It wasn't that the part cost a lot of money.
And I looked at the bill. It was $125 an hour.
Okay. Yeah, it was crazy.
I know, there's doctors that don't make $125 an hour.
And interestingly, as you say, the doctors, they make $125 an hour, but they have to spend it on insurance and employees and paperwork and all that. So these are things that are available to people rather than working in the McDonald's, and they don't take advantage of it. But anyway, that's just
okay.
So what
anyway,
other laws are
well,
there?
Well, there's just a whole bunch. You know, the next thing is that in California, the Consumer Privacy Act starts right now in 2020, and this allows residents of the state of California to force companies like data companies, right, to disclose what type of information that they share with other companies.
Okay.
All right. So if you want to know, like, you know, well, we don't live in California anymore, but people in California, if they wanted to find out, hey, what kind of information is Google or Facebook or all these data collection, Yahoo, all these data, Apple, all these data collection companies, what are they sharing? You know, what kind of private information about me are they sharing? Well, now you can sort of file like a Freedom of Information Act with those companies, with those data collection companies, and find out exactly what they're telling you.
You know, I think a better answer, to be honest, is just to not allow them to share it. That would be a better answer, because if you think about, again, the unintended consequences, so now all of these hundreds of thousands of people are going to file for what information that they're sharing and cause more time, more paperwork, more government, you know, overseeing. Just don't let people share things. And the things that they share are not just your financial information as far as your income things, but they share things like where you Google to and where you are, what you like. So if I go on the internet and I start searching, I don't know, cars or something, and I keep focusing, say, back to a Chevy or a Cadillac or whatever, you know, that information goes to somewhere, and all of a sudden I start getting all these ads about those types of cars.
And that's how that happens.
Yes.
Right? And another thing,
and I think they just shouldn't be allowed to share it.
Well, you know, there's more to it. In other words, when you walk in a shopping mall, anybody that ever says, oh, well, I want some Wi-Fi. You know, that happens all the time, doesn't it? You know, we go out and you're on your phone or whatever. Now, see, that's why I carry a separate hotspot, because I don't want to be on anybody's Wi-Fi. Okay, but what they do is once you go on their Wi-Fi, they track you all through the shopping mall. And like you'll walk into Macy's and all of a sudden on your phone, you'll start getting ads from Macy's and stuff like that. But, you know, really the law, Linda, that I would like to see nationally they create is the law that says that, you know, when you want an app, and any kind of app, so you want an app on your phone to bring you information, you notice how the vast majority of the apps say, okay, well, app, let's just say Acme. Acme wants access to your photographs. Yeah. Acme wants access to your phone contacts. They want access to this and access to that. Well, no, I don't. All I want is the stupid app. I don't want you to share everything that's in my emails, all my photographs, what my location is, who all my contacts are, all their emails, all their information. I don't want you to do that. And unfortunately, so I don't do that. If an app comes up and starts asking me a lot of intrusive information, I won't get the app. But that's a law that needs to be created.
Well, it should be that people should have the right to only to opt in. So it's not that you're automatically opted in and you have to physically opt out.
Right.
But you should have to physically opt in to allow anybody all this information that they're getting. And you know, we get tons of little letters and things on the internet, and letters in the mail that said, okay, here's our privacy information, and you have to read this, you know, 30-page document,
that's exactly,
you know,
right. 30
and
pages.
Say, if you don't want it, write to here or there. I mean, that's ridiculous. We should have to opt in.
Well, let's have a cup of coffee, because I've got more laws I want to talk about.
Okay.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, at Amazon.com.
Well, how is that white chocolate mocha latte I just made you?
Okay, so I got to tell you, it's phenomenal. Okay, so we get ourselves this great Christmas present for each other, which is the coffee machine, right?
Right.
That does like everything. So it's like a total Starbucks at the Martinelli Ranch. and you said, okay, so how does it taste? And I said, well, it tastes great, but where's the little logo on the top of my coffee?
And we won't say what I said to that. But yeah, it's really nice to have. And it took me a little bit along with help from family and friends to learn how to work it, but I think I've got it now.
It's a little sophisticated, isn't it?
It is a little sophisticated, but it sure does a good job. Well, anyway, that's a huge treat, because I love a cappuccino and latte. So thank you for that present.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for my present. Hey, so I want to continue with the laws, and there's going to be a softening of some gun laws, but an increase in restrictions of other gun laws across the United States, and one of those locations is going to be in the state of Colorado, where now in 2020, they've got what they refer to as a red flag law. And so what this allows is for family members and law enforcement to petition the court to temporarily take away the weapons of a person that might be deemed to be a danger to themselves and others.
And I like that.
It is, as long as that law is not abused. And there has to be, you know, just speaking from the legal side, there has to be some specific articulable evidence, okay, facts and evidence that the person is a danger to themselves, a danger to others, gravely disabled, or, and because I think that's really important. You know, you and I teach active shooters, and obviously one of the big motives for active shooting across the United States is mental health.
Absolutely. And Ron, we just had this person who went into the rabbi's home and stabbed a number of people, killed people, critically injured people, and his family had been trying to get him committed about 8 months or so ago.
Correct.
Trying to get him committed, standing in front of a judge, begging that judge to commit him because he had these mental issues and was dangerous, and the judge refused to do it. And I just think that that's horrible, because that judge, in my opinion, cost these people their lives. And this is the same thing with weapons. You know what? Every law is going to get abused. It's just a matter of fact. It's human nature. But for the most part, if we can get a huge preponderance of people that have mental issues and their family goes and asks for this kind of help and they get it, that would be amazingly wonderful.
Well, you know, I talk about gun issues all the time and all these gun control movements and everything like that. And I talk about how ridiculous many of them are. And that's because most of this is common sense. And you know what I say all the time, right? Yeah, dogs and guns, it's the owner, right? The gun doesn't do anything. The dog doesn't do anything without the behavior of the owner. And so you have to, like you said, with mental health, you've absolutely got to address the behavioral issues. But when we talk about, you know, here's the new progressive left criminal justice yuppie phrase, and that is restorative justice, right? Restorative justice. Well, let me tell you what my idea of restorative justice is: holding the jurists, holding the judges responsible for abhorrent, ridiculous, nonsensical, and dangerous behavior, because behavior also affects these judges, just like these people, just like this incident with the hate crime in New York, okay, in Muncie, where the guy, like you said, goes in, and he's nutty as a fruitcake, like you said, and the family had begged the judge, and the judge wouldn't do it. It seems to me, and judges, the reason that judges get away with so much crap, Linda, is because they get immunity from the bench. And I think we need to revisit that. I think if we're going to talk about restorative justice, we need to look at that law that grants judges immunity from prosecution and civil litigation, and we need to hold them accountable and just basically say, look, you're really no different than anybody else. You know, even as an officer of the court, the highest officer of the court is the judge. If you act in an objectively unreasonable manner, an abhorrent behavior, if you show egregious negligence while you're on the bench, you should lose your qualified immunity. Because how the heck are we protected from you? And you know how many times I go into court and I run into judges that just, you know, you just shake your head and you say, you know, a lot of these guys are elected, which means that, hey, you know, we just have to vote in good judges and we have to vet them. But I've seen judges that are appointed judges, and I just shake my head and go, what is wrong with you?
Well, I totally agree with you, and it's way too often that that's the case. So I do agree with the law in Colorado.
Okay, well, let's move on, yep. And let's talk about weed. He got weed! Okay, so weed, marijuana, yep. is becoming legal in even more states, and one of the states that just passed the, you can have up to 20 or 30 grams of weed and not be arrested for possession of weed is Illinois. Now, if you look at the states that have some of the highest mental health problems and some of the highest vehicular homicide and manslaughter problems
and gun crimes and stuff,
it is these states that legalize marijuana. And I'm sorry, but it's a gateway drug. Okay,
I agree with you.
Every cop knows that marijuana is a gateway drug.
Well, the Surgeon General came out last year with a huge report that said the dangers of the drug. So why are we making it even more legal instead of less legal?
That's right. And the next thing, we talk about, you know, restorative justice and this stupid movement, is that there is a growing movement for no cash bail. In other words,
right.
You know, before and currently in the majority of states in the United States, if you are arrested, you have to post bail to guarantee your return to court to stand trial.
Right. So if your bail is $100,000, you'd have to post $10,000.
That's right. 10% of that.
Right. And that would... You would forfeit that
if you didn't show up. That's right.
And
the newest state to go to no cash bail is the state of New York. The state that we're reading currently has all of these problems. And so, you know, if you just do a little bit of Googling on the state of New York and specifically the city of New York City, which is, I think, in Suffolk County, New York, you will find that they have released violent criminals, you know, domestic violence, assaults, aggravated assaults, assaults on police officers, and people that have committed hate crimes. They've released them on their own recognizance, no bail, and within a day to a week to a month, they have returned and committed other crimes.
Well, of course, and there's no motivation. Now, their thought is that it's discriminatory to charge these bails because the richer people can get out on bail and the poor people can't. That's their rationalization. But again, where do you think about the public that is the recipient of the crimes that these people recommit when they get out? There's no comparison. And we are constantly anymore in this country giving the criminals more rights than the victims, more rights than the general community, more rights than the citizens. It doesn't matter that people get re-victimized. I don't understand that mentality.
Well, you know, that, and I'm so glad you brought this up because the paradigm has completely switched 180 degrees to the perpetrator and not the victim. And where is this coming from? You know?
Well, and here's my question, as always. To what end?
Thank you.
Right?
Thank you
Who does this serve? It certainly doesn't serve the law-abiding American citizen.
And you know, and I know we pick on California a lot, but California is a great example. And unfortunately, Texas is becoming the next California with regards to this ridiculous criminal justice reform and letting people out on their own recognizance, and some of these counties like Dallas County where you can steal $950 worth of stuff and not even be arrested. I mean, this stuff, as you and I talk about all the time, Linda, is completely behavioral. Outside of the mental health issues, it's behavioral. And you do nothing something to modify behavior.
Well, you gave
before,
them a
people
license.
Were scared
you to, give like people a license to steal.
And do all the other behavioral things, negative behavioral things, violent things, dangerous things that hurt the safety and security of the public. And it is these district attorneys and these judges and these legislators that need to be reformed.
They're all insulated. Sure. And what do people think when people go into stores and steal $950? Okay, that store owner has had to pay for that merchandise. Okay, so maybe they've paid $500 or $600 or $700 for that merchandise out of their pocket. If people come in numerous times a day and steal from them, they are going to be out of business. Then what happens to your tax base? What happens to that building that then becomes abandoned? I mean, the unintended consequences to all of these things are absolutely ridiculous, and nobody thinks about it anymore. They think about the poor criminal instead of the poor citizen.
Well, you know, here's part of the problem that I see, and it's behavior on the part of the people that create these laws. These people that create these laws, these legislatures, and some of these judges that vote on these things, these are people that are part of the rich elite, okay? And they're insulated. They're insulated by wealth. They're insulated by property. These guys and gals do not walk around on the streets like we do. They don't respond to calls for service like law enforcement.
Right, exactly.
And first responders do. They are not victims.
And they have bodyguards, and they have limousines, and they have all these things that do insulate them.
And people that protect them all the time in the Capitol buildings and in the legislative buildings and in the courthouses. So they are completely disconnected from the people. And they really all serve at our pleasure. It's not the other way around. So it's really, we've created a situation where the tail is wagging the dog, and the citizens in the United States are the people that are suffering. Anyway, so I wanted to talk about that. In all due respect to the state of New York and their no cash bail, there are some exceptions for that. Okay, so there will be a cash bail for domestic violence. There'll be a cash bail for sexual assaults. There'll be a cash bail for terrorism, and there'll be a cash bail for witness intimidation.
What about murder?
Nope.
Wow.
Not there.
Wow.
Not there. Not there. Okay, and here's a really interesting one that I'm going to follow, and we'll leave it with this one. In the state of Oregon, bicyclists, can now blow through stop signs and flashing red lights with immunity. Okay? Blow right through them. Instead of following the vehicle code like they've always followed in the past.
Well, I hope they have a lot of paramedics
there. Well, I'm telling you what. That's why I'm saying that's one I want to follow, because they blow through the stoplight. They blow through the flashing red light, which is the same thing as a stoplight or a stop sign. And they become a hood ornament. For a Chevy 2500 Silverado,
and they damage that person's car, and they damage that person's psyche,
or they get killed, or they get seriously injured, and then we got to pay for them.
Yeah.
So here again, what a stupid law is that? Yeah. So anyway, that's just some of the laws I wanted to talk
about.
But
I have some, Ron.
Oh, okay. Well, you go ahead, young lady.
Okay. Well, back in 2001, we had September 11th, right? We are now in 2020. And finally, the Department of Homeland Security has set a deadline for complying with a law that was proposed way back when, that there should be standards for sources of identification, such as driver's licenses. And what they want to do, first of all, as of just recently, last year, travelers that want to board an airplane, they can no longer just have a driver's license. They have to have a real ID. They call it real ID.
Well, like a passport. In some states, like California, are actually calling them real IDs, which is stupid. Because before, in California, your driver's license was your real ID until they allowed all the illegal aliens to have driver's licenses, which totally negated the real ID, because they don't require anything for the real ID like you and me had to do.
Well, and these have a star in the upper right-hand corner, which and some other features which make them harder to be forged. So the security requirements of that real ID are going to enhance and improve commercial aviation security, which is great, which we all need. And So some other states have some new laws, too, regarding the driver's license. New Hampshire, they can have the state mark their sex as X instead of male or female, which is interesting in case you don't happen to identify as either. So some people say that this is another step towards decreasing stigmatization and promoting equality. I say, I'm sorry, you probably were born a male or female. That's kind of how God created us, and I think we should leave it at that, but that's just my opinion. You did talk about the marijuana. The number of states that now allow recreational use is up to 11. So there's new laws there. And in Nevada, you can't even refuse to hire someone who tests positive for marijuana anymore.
And I'm sure California is that way. But you know what? Let me bring that up for a second. You know, the medical marijuana, which was a law that was passed a number of years ago in California, and I think it was called Prop 215, and the medical marijuana card is called the 215 card. People that have the Prop 215 card, which is medical marijuana in California, here's something that you can't do. You can't purchase a gun.
Okay.
You can't have a concealed carry license. So isn't that interesting? And I'll bet you 95% of Californians don't even know that.
Well, they probably don't know that. The laws just constantly change in California on the guns, and it's something you really have to keep up with. Here's a big brother new law. In Hawaii, restaurants must offer a healthy drink as part of the standard option for drinks that comes with the children's meal. So you have to offer milk or water or fruit juice with no added sugar. So, you know, here's the government again telling you what to eat and drink. And they say that Hawaii has a lot of obesity and diabetes. So they're just going to regulate now what you eat, which, again, I just disagree with. How about educating people better in their families and schools about what to eat? But you don't make a law that says what you have to eat and can't eat.
Okay. Oh, by the way, speaking of ecological things and nutritious things, in the state of New Mexico, I believe it may just be Albuquerque, New Mexico, but I think it might be the entire state of New Mexico. They're getting rid of plastic bags.
And
Oregon. As they did in California.
Yep, Oregon just did the same as of January 1st. So the only thing that you can bring home in a plastic bag anymore is fish or meat, or take home your dry cleaning. And then just one more thing, a new California law, because there can never be enough California laws, forbids employers to discriminate against your hairstyle. So if you have dreadlocks or cornrows or braids, you can't discriminate against hiring somebody, as though I would say to somebody, I'm not hiring you because you have those cornrows in your hair. I mean, it just opens in a whole nother can of worms for employers. There are a lot of things and that come into play when you hire somebody, and dreadlocks is not the biggest of them.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere, and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our response to active shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our response to active shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to responsetoactiveshooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, responsetoactiveshooter.com, and be safe out there.
Chad Wolf, who's the acting secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, did a really good thing just recently, and that is that he ordered a review of the state's laws, the states that allow illegal aliens to obtain driver's licenses, and they also restrict sharing data about those driver's license applicants with federal immigration authorities.
What's the reason for that, Linda?
That he ordered the review?
No. I understand why he ordered the review. It makes a lot of sense. Why is there an addendum to that that says that the departments of motor vehicles can't share that information with federal authorities?
Well, it's the addendum comes from the different states. So, for example, the state of New York, and I think that New Jersey also has it.
And New York just went to driver's licenses for illegal aliens just this past month.
Yeah, well, they have a green light law in New York, and they also have a similar one in New Jersey. And it not only allows the illegal aliens to get a driver's license, but the DMV is not allowed to give the data to ICE or to other agencies within Homeland Security. So this, I think, is what has Chad Wolf, you know, kind of up in arms, like, what the heck? You know, we're not able to get the information, and you're giving these guys driver's licenses, and the driver's licenses can be used for all kinds of different things.
Of course they
but,
can.
Since they are being allowed to obtain a driver's license using foreign documentation, that policy lends itself to voter fraud, which we absolutely know happens from having the driver's license, especially in the state of California.
Oh, I was just going to say, yep. Thank you for bringing that up, because we have seen that happen with not just a few people, but tens of thousands of people.
And okay. The DMV even marking their driver's license to get a voter registration and marking them as Democrats.
That's so, exactly right. Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I want to mention with regards to driver's licenses that a lot of people, unless you buy a weapon, people don't know that. But the driver's license is the gateway identification for purchasing a firearm in the United States, no matter what state you're in. Okay, so that's what they ask for. They ask for a California driver's license or a Texas driver's license or Utah driver's license as your form of identification. They don't ask for a passport. They don't ask for a global ID card. They ask for the driver's license.
Okay, well, I've always disagreed with giving illegal aliens driver's licenses. I disagree with them being allowed to be here in the first place.
Well, let me say something else about this, because, you know, we have, you and I always talk about this, and the general public probably doesn't understand, but the federal government, we have all these laws in the federal government, and we have them with, you know, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, which is the monitoring agency for firearms acquisitions, right? And the registration of firearms. And you know, when you buy a weapon, you have to fill out, and I don't remember the number, but you've got to fill out the ATF card that says, you know, you're not a felon, you're a citizen of the United States, you're not a crazy person, you're not addicted to drugs, all of these things. So you fill out all the check things, and they submit that information. But there are literally millions of those forms being filed every single year, and there is no way that the federal government and BATF can check all that information.
Well, and already know that they're not, because there have been shootings, especially the one in Texas at the church,
right,
where people fell through the cracks because these forms weren't checked.
Well, let me say this one thing. So one of the things that you have to check is whether or not you're an illegal alien. Well, If you're showing a driver's license, you can absolutely lie and say that you're in this country legally. And I'll tell you what, I'll bet you, and I know it's a little bit of speculation, but it's based on experience, 90% of those people that would purchase firearms would fall through the cracks, because there's really no way, especially now, that the United States government can determine whether you're in this country legally or not. So, well, that's an absolute red flag to me.
Sure. And not only that, but DHS feels that these policies paved the way also for, besides for voter fraud, identity theft, but also for terrorism. So they have, DHS has said that they object to these policies, and now they've initiated an investigation of the states that have these policies about giving illegal aliens driver's license, which I agree. The new policies say in New York, these green light policies, even if ICE or DHS is trying to investigate serious crimes, they cannot collect the information from DMV. And that's just baloney, because how do you keep our country safe when you have these agencies working against each other and really against the law-abiding citizens? Because who's getting these driver's licenses? Not law-abiding citizens. They're not citizens in the first place. They're here illegally.
Well, I think my recommendation, if I was President Trump, and these policies are coming out of the state's departments of motor vehicles, is I would hold back the federal funding for highways in those states that had that type of policy. Okay, because the feds can hold back federal funding on the buildings of roads and bridges and things like that for states. Okay, and of course, that's something that's going to go to the courts.
Well, and I was just going to say that, because Trump did do that on some other things and on this whole sanctuary state type of thing.
Right.
And, you know, some liberal judge just knocks it down and says, well, no, you can't do that. Well, of course he can do that, but you have the judges that are legislating from the bench. But these laws that they're making in these states that allow, you know, really criminals to act easier and have an easier time of committing their criminal acts, especially things like child pornography rings or human trafficking rings. Those types of things are going to be much harder for the government to resolve with these types of laws. And again, Ron, it's the same question for me. To what end would you make these laws? Who does this serve? It does not serve the American people. And I don't understand our legislators that continue to advocate for, not for the citizens, not for the law-abiding, income-earning citizens, but for those who are here illegally and who are committing crimes.
Well, I think it's pretty easy to figure out, okay? This is not rocket science. This is all a power grab by the Democrats to increase the voter ranks from the illegal aliens, because, you know, we mentioned California and the continuous voter fraud in California. We've had voter fraud in Texas. The voter fraud always relating to illegal aliens is that they have been registered as Democrats. You never see a single illegal alien that has been found to have committed voter fraud that registered as a Republican.
Right.
Not one single one. I dare anybody to show me one single instance where an illegal alien registered as a Republican.
And they absolutely vote, and then they fight against Judicial Watch, who comes in and tries to sue them.
Correct.
For their voting records, and they fight against it. So you know that there's nefarious things going on. What Wolf's memo said is that the DHS has to assess what DMV information is available and how is it accessed and what they use in their day-to-day operations and what are the security consequences and the long-term impacts of what they're doing. So I applaud him for making this decision.
Well, you know, it's all reasonable. Everything that he's doing is reasonable, and you can see it's towards the protection of this country vis-a-vis national security. And, you know, you mentioned Judicial Watch, and let me just give these guys a plug, Lynn, because you and I donate to Judicial Watch, and it is the one nonprofit organization that really fights on behalf of the American people. These are the guys, Judicial Watch are the guys that are getting the writs, they're getting the subpoenas, they force the government and governmental agencies to be accountable to the American people through the discovery process. And I just wish more people would understand that and donate money to Judicial Watch.
Yeah, I agree. They do phenomenal work. And once you do donate money, they will send you their reports on what they're working on.
Oh, and they're really good reports. They're thought-provoking reports, and they're non-political reports. That's the other thing people need to know about Judicial Watch. They're not conservative. They're not liberal. They are advocates for truth and justice, and they call it as they see it. But you do get a lot of really cool stuff from Judicial Watch, you know, if you donate money.
Yeah. You know, I was going to go in a different direction, but I'm going to switch gears a little bit. And, you know, now that we're in 2020 and it's an election year, there's a whole lot of stuff going on. We have the impeachment. We have Pelosi still holding back the articles of impeachment. Yet, I'm reading that Justice Roberts is planning for a January trial in the mm-hmm. Senate. So not sure how that's working because they haven't even received the articles of impeachment yet because Pelosi wants to control the whole game.
But she can't. Constitutionally, she
can't.
Sure,
she can't, but
she has no, but as long as people understand, constitutionally, she has no foundation. She has no legal right to control anything except the way the Congress, you know, looks at the impeachment process, okay, which we said was kind of like a preliminary hearing.
Right.
Okay, now we're going to trial.
Right.
But it's Pelosi's, here's her obligation, to submit the articles of impeachment to the Senate.
Right.
That's it. You had your opportunity to call witnesses. You chose not to call fact witnesses. Those witnesses that you brought forward that you said were fact witnesses were proven not to be fact witnesses. You had your opportunity. You've voted for impeachment in the Congress. The president has been impeached in the Congress. Now it's supposed to go to trial in the Senate, and that's where the Chief Justice of the United States, Roberts, serves as the presiding judge, and then it becomes a probable cause issue, okay? And a cause beyond a reasonable doubt issue, actually, I believe. But that's it for you, Nancy. You had your shot in the dark, and you took it.
Well, you know, and an interesting just byline, it's really come out by some people, actually from some of the Democrats in Congress, that they were very, very much threatened and pressured
to
have their vote be to go along with the impeachment. Whether they thought that they should or not, they basically were threatened that they had to get in line
right.
with the party.
Well, they've got it. You know, I'll tell you what, when they're coming up for reelection, they have got, it's like the old Desi Arnaz TV show, Lucy, you got a lot of explaining to do, because they're going to have to explain to their constituents why they've basically done almost nothing during this past year and a half, when they've been so hyper-focused on impeaching the president of the United States, okay? I'm so disappointed in both sides and not moving this country forward. It's just, you and I have had a million conversations on this.
Well, sure, and when the Republicans had the chance before the Democrats got the majority, they didn't move the country forward either. So
right,
it's definitely both sides.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Now, here we are. We've got to deal with this whole impeachment issue, and it will be dealt with. So, you know, we're in for that wild ride, which is fine. You know, I'm ready for the wild ride. I've got my seatbelt on and I'm ready to go because I think it's really interesting. I think that this is going to come back to hurt the Democrats. And, you know, I'm looking at the end of 2019 with the stock market at the highest it's ever been. I mean, just breaking record after record after record. I'm looking at the employment rates. I'm looking at not white Americans, Ron, all Americans, all colors, all creeds, all everybody that profited and has a better life due to President Trump. You look at all the foreign policies, and you and I started talking, I think, 2 years ago about this whole China issue and about the tariffs, and everybody was, oh my gosh, he's, you know, going to implode the country and everybody's going to suffer. And I said, no, you have to stay the line
here. And you know what? Let me give you a kudo, because, you know, as a businesswoman, you work internationally, all right? And you trade with a lot of partners, China, Vietnam, Indonesia, South Korea, Taiwan, all in Asia. And you said that, Linda. You said, don't panic, mm-hmm. because China needs us far more than we need China. Mm-hmm. And you said at that time, there'll be a little bit of pain. We're going to feel some pain. Our farmers are going to feel some pain. But stay the course and hold fast, because there'll be a lot of gain out of this in the end. And I got to congratulate you, because you were spot on.
Well, and I'm not the only person that was. It was, to me, it was very plain, because I know that China... you know, they just had a lot more to lose than we did. And President Trump protected the farmers, and the only farmers that are having issues were ones that had issues anyway.
That's true. And they were overextended.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, we know as ranchers, we know that, and we've farmed, okay, avocados and stuff like that, and almonds and all sorts of things like that. When you are in that line of work, you may end up overextending, right? Because,
tough.
I mean, that's solely what you do. If that, and thank God it wasn't solely what we did, okay? But if that's what solely what you do, there's all sorts of things that affect that. There's
weather.
Weather is a huge effector. How
insects,
markets are,
sure.
insects. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of the government intervention in overregulation, water. I mean, there's a myriad of things that affect you that have nothing to do with President Trump.
But
okay?
his new agreement has given, especially our soybean farmers, you know, just a huge boon, because China has now agreed to spend more money than ever with our farmers. So, you know, there's just so many good things to be said about what President Trump has done in the last couple of years. And the China thing, we're at phase one. Phase two, President Trump feels like it will resolve everything. I'm not sure if it's just going to be two phases, but whatever it is, we are moving in the right direction.
And don't forget about USMCA.
Yeah,
okay?
Absolutely.
It's huge between Canada, United States,
and
Mexico.
Yeah.
Just
so
absolutely phenomenal.
How could you not reelect this president when we are so going in the right direction?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I think he's going to do better this year than he did in the last election. I think the Democrats are really going to regret this road that they're rowing down and these horses that they hitched their wagon to, meaning Pelosi, Schiff and Schumer. I think they're really going to regret this, and I think the American people are going to remember everything that they did when it comes to be election time in November.
We're going to vote our pockets, and that's what I'm doing.
And I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, Happy New Year to everyone, and looking forward to the ride of a lifetime in 2020.
Oh, it's going to be a roller coaster for sure. Happy New Year.